Welcome to the Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman in our new Sunday morning time slot. It was obviously a light slate of games yesterday, Bruce, but the primetime game was pretty interesting to watch, and you've been talking about it all offseason. Miami, the new offense, seems legit.
It's definitely better, Stu. I mean, they were just discombobulated last year, and it really cratered at the end of the year in the bowl game where they couldn't even score. Credit to Manny Diaz. I mean, he made a change that he had to make. Dan Enos, who had been the OC, that wasn't working. He brings in Rhett Lashley, much more up-tempo, simplifies things, and certainly helps that he has a experienced playmaking quarterback in De'Aaron King. They have good skill talent. We saw that last night. I mean, they got two stud tight ends. They have three really dynamic running backs. The receivers aren't great, but they're capable. I think the thing that, you know, I don't want to get into the is Miami back thing, because we've talked about this on this podcast a lot. My you know, gold standard line on this is Miami is not quote unquote back until they have a parade at the end of the season. But right now, Miami's better. Now the question is, can Miami challenge maybe Notre Dame and whoever else, North Carolina, to be the next best team in the ACC? And I think the key is going to be how much better can they get on the offensive line, because Garen Justice is a really good offensive line coach. I think that was a good hire that they made. But he's the third offensive line coach in 3 years, and that lack of continuity, I think, is an issue. But they just looked like they were a step ahead and playing with a more of a purpose. It was on the road. I mean, Louisville has a lot of speed, and it was an impressive showing for them in week two.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Baby steps here. We're not talking national championships yet. We're just talking getting, after several years, certainly Mark Richt's last season, Manny Diaz's first season, just an absolutely dreadful offense. So De'Aaron King makes a big difference, and it's interesting. The first game against UAB, he didn't have a great passing game. He made a difference in the running game. This week, he had a very good passing game against Louisville. And I think the offensive line, I know it's early. I know Louisville's defense was pretty ugly. I mean, they had some just total breakdowns that certainly allowed for some of those big plays. But in particular, Cameron Harris's long run around the end was perfectly seal the edge play by their offensive line. I know that they picked up that grad transfer right tackle from Houston. So, I mean, it just seems like they're improved all across the board. It's not just De'Aaron King. It's not just Rhett Lashley's play calling. It's getting Brevin Jordan more involved. He's obviously an extremely talented tight end. It's these new running backs. It's that offensive line. To your point, obviously, Clemson's still the class of the ACC, but I don't know that, as you would say right now, there's a clear who's going to play them. Remember, it's not divisions this year, so it's who's going to finish second and play them in the ACC title game. And I certainly think Miami's in that mix, along with Notre Dame, along with UNC, perhaps Pitt. Pitt took care of business against Syracuse. By the way, what has happened to Dino Babers?
Oh my goodness! Offensive line looked horrible. I mean, I don't know how many – I don't know if some of it is Tommy DeVito holding on the ball too long too. I think it's a combination of maybe receivers getting open. But, man, they look like it's going to be a little shorter season. They look like they could give up like 100 sacks this year the way that the group is going.
It's really puzzling, right, because you and I were huge Dino Babers fans and he breaks out and he has that 10-win season. And then that was the end of that. There was no building on it. They had a losing season last year, and unless that offense figures something out. I know they lost some running backs who opted out, and you know, it was kind of a tumultuous preseason. Guys were walking out of practice. They look disastrous in their first two games, and on offense at least. Defensively, actually not that bad. Anyway, we don't need to get into a deep dive ACC standings discussion, but certainly Miami more of a factor than they have been the last couple years. What else stood out to you on Saturday?
You know what? Hats off to UCF and Josh Heupel. I thought they went on the road and they responded well to a Georgia Tech team that tested them a little bit, you know, just in terms of they had some momentum. Look, I'll be honest. I don't think Scott Frost did an amazing job in Orlando, and I thought the program would start to backslide, and it's not showing much signs of that, to be honest. Now, it's really early in this season, but was impressed with Dylan Gabriel, and I think that they – I don't know. You know, again, I don't know if I think they're better than Cincinnati. We're going to find that stuff out. I don't know. I'm interested to see how they do against – you know, there's three or four, I think, pretty good to very good teams in the AAC, but I was interested to watch that. It was a good chance to sit down and see that. And look, I mean, Tech is a young team with a true freshman quarterback, but I thought it was still an impressive showing by UCF, the way they went out and the kind of attacked that moment like that.
I agree with you about Heupel, and I've said this in my Sunday morning column. I was very underwhelmed when they hired. I thought you'd want to cash in on the momentum of what Scott Frost had built there and just promote somebody from his own staff. Heupel, obviously, ugly ending at Oklahoma. He had been Missouri's OC for a couple years. Didn't seem like the most inspired hire, but he's kept it going. They did lose three games last year. They were all very close losses. He's now had three, I believe they've played four Power 5 teams in the regular season. They crushed Pitt his first year. They crushed Stanford last year. They did lose a close one on the road to Pitt, and then obviously crushed Georgia Tech. So that program's still going strong. Dylan Gabriel, obviously great quarterback, a lot of weapons around him, and actually pretty good defensively as well. I think the American this year, they're very good. We expect Cincinnati to be very good. We expect Memphis to be very good. SMU's been lighting it up so far in their first two games, so should be interesting there. And also, I think the other thing is, if I wanted to point to something Saturday, Oklahoma State looked terrible against Tulsa, and it was puzzling because they've got Chuba, they've got Tylan Wallace. Now, their quarterback, Spencer Sanders, got hurt on the first series, and then they bring in the backup and stick with him for most of the first three quarters, and they were losing 7-3 to Tulsa late in the third quarter. Then they bring in the true freshman, Shane Illingworth, and immediately it was one of the how many times have you seen this? The true freshman comes in and saves the day, immediately sparked the offense. But still, they scored one touchdown against Tulsa.
Yeah, their offensive line struggled. And look, credit to Tulsa. They had a rocky training camp, and I think they looked they were very inspired to play, and I think they rose up to the moment pretty well. That's still a lot of firepower that Oklahoma State has. But yeah, I thought their offensive line definitely looked shaky at times, and so we'll see. I mean, it is a big jolt when you lose your starting quarterback on the first series. And so we'll see if Spencer Sanders' ankle heals up fast enough for him to get back on the field this week. And if that's the case, you know, I think one challenge for college football fans and media probably is, and it's such a short season to say this, but like maybe – you're going to see some pretty significant swings from a team looking awful one week to bouncing back and like, oh, that's really what they're like. And I just think you're going to see wildly inconsistent. I guess what I'm saying is I would not write off Oklahoma State because they looked really dismal for the first three quarters of the opener. But, you know, they were a three touchdown plus favorite, and they had all they could handle from Tulsa.
Well, an example of what you're talking about, wildly swing from one week to the next. How about Navy wildly swinging from the first half to the second half? Yeah, halftime of that game against Tulane, they're down 24-0 after having been slaughtered by BYU, and you're thinking, what happened to Navy? They won 11 games last year. How can they be this terrible? And then they come back and win. Biggest comeback in school history. So there's a team that's played two games. You have no idea what to make of them. Back to the podcast in a second, but first a word about Earnest. Now's the time to get your student loan payments under control. You could be saving by refinancing your student loans with Earnest. Interest rates have hit record lows, which means it's a great time to refinance your student loans and see if you can lower your monthly payment. If you've been making the same monthly payment on your student loans for the last couple of years, odds are you could reduce your payment and save by refinancing with Earnest. Checking your new rate is fast and easy. To start, complete a few questions online. It only takes 2 minutes. Then you'll get a personalized rate estimate without affecting your credit score. And now you can get a $100 cash bonus when you refinance a student loan with earnest.com/audible. Once again, you get a $100 cash bonus when you refi your student loan at earnest.com/audible. Not available in all states. Visit earnest.com/audible for more details. Terms and conditions apply. Earnest student loan refinance loans are made by Earnest Operations, LLC, NMLS number 1204917. California Financing Law License number 605478830 2nd Street, Suite 401N, San Francisco, California 94107. Visit earnest.com/licenses for a full list of license states.
All right, Stu, let's pivot a little bit. So we, on our Big Noon kickoff show yesterday on Fox, we had the Big Ten schedule rollout, and
thanks for stretching that out for as long as humanly possible, by the way.
Hey, what else were you going to be doing on a Saturday morning, Stu? Come on. So here we go. Like, Scott Frost, man, Nebraska wanted to be back in the worst way. Buckle up, because now you open up at Ohio State, then you get Wisconsin. So those are the two most physical teams in the Big Ten. You're going to get them week one and week two. Then they have your alma mater, Northwestern. I think it's a road game. And then they get Penn State. I mean, that is a brutal first month of the schedule for a team to try to get some traction, I would think.
And it was, I mean, first of all, when you see that they open against Ohio State, obviously your first thought is the Big Ten taking it out on them for the very aggressive disagreement with the decision in the first place, the players suing them. But I actually think, I mean, I love a good conspiracy theory, but
you think it was coincidental?
I actually, well, first of all, in terms of the overall schedule, they were already going to play Ohio State and Penn State. They were supposed to play Rutgers too. They dropped Rutgers.
So why'd they drop Rutgers instead of one of the two heavyweights?
Spite? Okay. I don't know. Bill Moose certainly did not hesitate to complain about it, that's for sure. But in terms of the Ohio State opener, so they play Ohio State every year. Nebraska and Ohio State are permanent crossover opponents. And the reason is, when Nebraska joined in 2011, they're a brand name program, right? They haven't performed that way in several years, but they're one of the all-time blue blood programs of the sport. And Ohio State and Nebraska, in theory, would have been expected to be a game that has conference championship implications most years. It hasn't panned out that way. But it seemed to me they wanted, first of all, they did East versus West for the whole first week, and they wanted a game that would be like the obvious, I assume, Fox Big Noon kickoff.
That is a marquee game, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a compliment. It's saying, we think people are going to want to watch this game. Now, why did they then stick Wisconsin right after that? I don't know. Either somebody has a sense of humor or really holds a grudge. But if you're Nebraska, you know, this program, I think, you know, if you saw the Bill Moose quotes to the Omaha World Herald, I mean, he's on the scheduling committee, and he's a very candid guy. He's going to tell you exactly what happened or what he's thinking. And it basically sounds like he tried to use his position on the committee to cut the Huskers a break. And the quote in there that you know, I highlighted, and I just think, like, you're like, is this really what it's come to, Nebraska? He's basically like, you know, we've got a good team and a great coach, and I just think we deserve a break as we try to become a Big Ten West contender again. It's not something you would have heard in the Tommy Frazier era, that's for sure.
Yes, well, look, it makes it just a little more interesting, right? And you know what? My TV crew did that matchup in Columbus 2 years ago, the last time Nebraska went there. And Adrian Martinez was a true freshman, and they gave Ohio State all they could handle on that day. I mean, they probably really could have won the game. They didn't, but they came real close. So we'll see what they have. I mean, look, it's basically still a month away. I keep thinking it's going to start sooner than that, but it's not. Very exciting that it's, you know, things are on paper now.
So we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about the Big Ten. There's another one that hasn't played yet that is coming back this week and only happens to be the most successful conference in college football, the SEC. And I mean, this is the opposite of SEC bias. We've barely given them any attention recently. And I do feel like anybody who's watched college football the last 2 weeks would say, like, this is not, I mean, this is nice. It's great to have the games back, but something's missing. And that something, in part, is Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida. And I do think that this coming Saturday is going to feel a lot different, like almost like the difference between the NFL preseason and the regular season, to have those teams. And right off the bat, right, they're not playing a non-conference game. So it's conference games, important conference games, right from the beginning. Of that lineup Saturday, which one are you most looking forward to?
I want to see Mike Leach's air raid in the SEC. You know, now we've seen it. We saw it a little bit when he was at Kentucky with Hal Mumme. But that was, I don't know what that was, 20, 25 years ago almost. But they will play LSU. LSU has legit guys on that defense, especially in the secondary. So to me, that is the most intriguing matchup of week one in the SEC. I just think, you know, you got the defending national champs, and they have to replace all but five starters against a coach who is so different from the SEC DNA. How's that going to work?
I mean, I'm fascinated in general by Mike Leach and the SEC. Because of the pandemic, we probably haven't gotten as much of a glimpse into what they're going to be doing. Now, KJ Costello, the former Stanford quarterback, looks like he'll be the starting quarterback. And what a, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I'm curious about that game. It feels like a little bit of a stacked against them, the deck stacked against them for their opener to play the defending national champs. I don't know. I mean, if LSU blows them off the field, I don't necessarily take that as a sign that they stink and this isn't going to work. It's just, and you know, somebody had to play the national champs first. But I mean, boy, I remember being at the Stanford Washington State game in Palo Alto 2 years ago when Gardner Minshew was on quarterback for one team and Costello was the quarterback for the other team, and it went right down to the last minute. Pac-12 North implications. Never in a million years would I have guessed that night that Mike Leach on one sideline and KJ Costello on the other would be one day at Mississippi State of all schools.
Would you have guessed that Gardner Minshew would have been one of those stars of week one in the NFL at that moment?
No, not. I mean, at that point, he was still, the phenomenon was just beginning. I do remember going to the visiting team press conference at Stanford. It was in this tiny, tiny little room, and he's up there with his aviator shades on and the mustache, and it was like, who is this guy? Like, who's just been dropped into the Pac-12 out of nowhere, and he's quite the persona. I don't think any of us expected him to be a star NFL quarterback. Did you?
No. Not surprised he's been an NFL quarterback, but to go, like, I think he was 19 of 20 week one. I mean, good for him. So that, you know, that's an interesting one. Look, I'm curious about, you know, my juices are kind of flowing as I looked at the schedule before we started this, where it's like, hey, you know, I'm interested to see what Auburn's going to look like this year. They play Kentucky. Kentucky is a solid team, you know, a top 25 caliber team. I think that's a sneaky good game because of, you know, I feel like Auburn is wildly unpredictable from year to year, right? And so that will be telling to see how they look against Kentucky.
I agree. I don't know what to expect of Auburn. I would say that my game answer to which one you're most intrigued by is Florida Ole Miss. And that is the first one, by the way. Florida is a team that a lot of people have talked themselves into. This is the year they could win the East. They could legitimately threaten Georgia. And I'm not seeing that yet, but I haven't actually seen them play it. And then Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin's debut as an SEC head coach, which you would have thought when it was at the time they hired him that would be, you know, he would be the talk of the town, possibly all offseason. Granted, it was a very different offseason than we expected, but he's basically flown under the radar, stayed controversy free. The only time we did see him really was for a monumental moment at the state capitol when they voted to change the flag and Mike Leach pulled his mask down, or no, tried to pull it back up. Whatever he did, it wasn't Do you remember? He was playing with his mask. I was like,
he just kind of pulled it back.
Idea. Yeah. But I think that's a team that could surprise people. He inherits some decent talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I know defense, not necessarily so much. And obviously, he's a good coach. I mean, he's a great offensive coach. He made a huge impact on Nick Saban's program at Alabama when he was there. So I don't know what to expect out of that game. Maybe Florida goes in and trounces them. Maybe Ole Miss pulls the upset. Nothing would surprise me much about anything in college football this year. But I do think that I think we know Alabama's going to be very good. Everybody else has as much questions. Don't you think, like, in the SEC, I mean, Georgia, we don't know who their quarterback's going to be now that Jamie Newman opted out. LSU is replacing almost their entire starting lineup. I mean, whatever the predicted SEC standings are, we could see it deviate wildly. A&M's had a couple opt-outs recently from one of their best receivers, from one of their starting linebackers. I don't know. I think it'll be and just the fact that they're playing 10 games, after resisting even playing 9, it's going to be fascinating.
So I'm curious because A&M is an interesting one to me as well. You mentioned Jamon Osborne, really good receiver for them, and also their second leading tackler, Anthony Hines, opted out basically less than a week before the season. Those are two of their best players to make that decision. I know Jimbo, by all accounts, has recruited very well, but this is year three. Their schedule, which last year was so rough, and people kind of were looking at they'll catch a little bit of a break. Not so. It's not Nebraska-like because they start with Vandy, but after that they go to Alabama, and then they got a top five Florida team coming in there. What are your expectations at A&M? Like, to me, they're one where coming into this year, I was like, oh, I think they have a chance to be a top 10 team. And the more this thing has played out in terms of, like I said, they had – I don't know where these two guys would rank if you were to rank the five best, the X number of best players A&M had, but I would think they would be in the top five or six. And, you match that up against a rough road of a schedule, especially out of the gate, like I said. I mean, they could be starting at a 1-2 very likely. What do you see for Jimbo's third year there?
Well, first of all, you talk about the schedule. It was originally going to be last year they went 7-5, and it was hard to really say, they weren't very good because they played Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. I mean, what did they, four of the top five teams, I think, in the final poll. So this year they were supposed to play, first of all, they were supposed to open with Abilene Christian, North Texas, Colorado, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Fresno State. Like, everybody looked at that schedule and said, gosh, I think A&M's going to be 6-0. And their crossover opponents were South Carolina and Vanderbilt. So I don't think there's anybody that caught a worse break by going to the 10-game conference-only schedule than A&M, who picked up Florida, who lost those gimme wins. And then, like you said, players are opting out, and I just think – if you're somebody who thinks this is A&M's year, you're basically banking entirely on Jimbo's recruits. He's such a good recruiter, and those guys have got a year in the system or whatnot. They're going to break out. I think at the end of the day, it's like, what do you think Kellen Mond's ceiling is? He's been their quarterback for 3 years now, and he's had his moments, certainly that game against Clemson 2 years ago, and then he's struggled quite a bit in other games. He's always just been very inconsistent. So unless you think he's going to have like a Joe Burrow type huge improvement in his senior season, I just don't see what there is to love about this team in terms of the guys that have actually played. It's more about potential.
If I set their over under wins at 6.5, what would you take?
6.5, huh? I think I would take the under. I think they're like a 6-4 team.
Yeah. I mean, look, as we said, at Alabama, then they play Florida. That's back-to-back. Then they go to at Mississippi State. Then they have a double on the road of East teams at South Carolina, at Tennessee. And then they finish home against LSU and then at Auburn. I mean, if they win seven games of that, you know, hats off to Jimbo Fisher. Like I said, I mean, when you lose two of your best players just a couple weeks before the opener because they opt out, you know, those are that seems like a lot to lose for a team that, you know, like I said, it wasn't like they were teaming with you know, guys who were established, proven stars already.
By the way, earlier we were talking about whether the Big Ten stacked the deck against Nebraska and the conspiracy theories. There's no question that when the SEC added those, I mean, they were blatant about it. When they added the two teams for each team, I think that they realized that with 10 games, there's a better chance that your champion might lose two games. And then, or maybe it's not the champion you're worried about, it's the second team. And you really want to, you feel like this is the year, especially before you knew the Big Ten was coming back, that you could get two teams in the playoff. And so when they went to add the teams, Georgia got Arkansas and Mississippi State. Alabama got Missouri and Kentucky. Meanwhile, poor Missouri, I don't know what they did to deserve this, got LSU and Alabama. There's no question that they tried to soften the teams that were most likely to be in playoff consideration.
Hey, quick trivia question. I assume you would guess on who the first team and second team preseason All-SEC quarterbacks are. Can you guess them?
Has that been announced? Yes. I just voted for it. I'm guessing the first team quarterback is Kyle Trask and the second team is Kellen Mond.
You're guessing correct. Hopefully you didn't look up an email to do that.
No, I mean, I got an email maybe 2 days ago asking to vote in that, and I was tempted to put KJ Costello because I've seen him play at a high level, and if he picks up that system quickly enough, I think he'll very quickly be one of the better quarterbacks in that conference. But, you know, you're also – there's a lot of mystery about, you know, how's Bo Nix going to look in Chad Morris's offense, and we don't even know who's going to win the Georgia quarter. I mean, everybody assumed it would be JT Daniels, but now the word is Dwan Mathis might – get the job instead. So a lot of mystery around. Is South Carolina a little bit of a surprise? Were you expecting that in the South Carolina quarterback decision?
I remembered him being a good player, so I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, for Colin Hill to be a grad transfer and leave, I don't think he was going somewhere where he didn't think he'd have a chance to win the job. So that didn't.
So he unseats Ryan. Yeah, I mean, he unseats Ryan Helinski, who was the quarterback pretty much all of last season after Jake Bentley got hurt in the first game.
Okay, Stu, back to the podcast in a minute, but first a word from DoorDash. So you want Chinese, they want pizza, someone else is craving Froyo, and I know that's probably Stu, of course. There's something for everyone on DoorDash. You've counted on restaurants, now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners at the Audible can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Audible. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Audible. Don't forget, that's code Audible for $5 off on your first order with DoorDash.
Hi, I'm Andy Staples with The Athletic. No matter what fitness fads you follow, one thing is true across every one of them. You have to get hydrated and stay hydrated. The best way to do that is Liquid IV. It is the most efficient way to get and stay hydrated because each serving helps you get as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. Why is that? It's the optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium delivered into your bloodstream. I live in a place where it is scorching hot, very humid, lose a lot of water when I go out running. I drink a Liquid IV beforehand. I drink a Liquid IV when I get back. It feels great. Partial to the acai berry before, lemon lime on the way back. I'm not sure exactly why it works out that way, but those are my favorites. Also, if you celebrate it a little bit, it doesn't have to be a workout thing. Maybe I had a neighbor who was testing out smoked old fashions, and maybe I had a few. Maybe I had one too many. When I got home, I drank a Liquid IV right before bed. I felt fantastic in the morning. So how do you get yourself some Liquid IV? You go to liquidiv.com and you use the code ATHLETIC at checkout, and you get 25% off anything you order. That is 25% off anything you order when you use the promo code ATHLETIC at liquidiv.com. So get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code ATHLETIC.
As far as the Pac-12, it's a little more chaotic now that we're getting closer to the home stretch of seeing when they start. As we reported on The Athletic earlier this week, or at least on Thursday, several coaches in several schools were very concerned about when they would start. And I think you've had a big disagreement between some ADs in the conference who have been very vocal, if you follow John Wilner's reporting, as well as Heather Dinich from ESPN.com's reporting, as well as some of the coaches who we've talked to. They're on very different sides of this discussion about when they think their players can come back safely because of how the programs have either gone on since the season was postponed. And the Pac-12 announced that they will make their basic announcement of what's going to happen on Thursday. So interesting times there, because it's an odd subplot, I feel like, to this story about, do they feel like they can start safely on October 31st, or do they feel like it may have to be November 7th before they can start? What do you think, Stu, sitting up there in the Bay Area in Stanford and Cal's backyard?
Well, it's been pretty fascinating to watch so basically you and John Wilner from the Mercury News are the two main people reporting on this. It's not like the Big Ten situation where I don't think there's a Sir Yacht of the Pac-12, let's put it that way. And it just shows you how the coaches may have completely different opinions than the people above them, or certain schools are pushing an agenda that is the opposite of others. Because if you read your story, those are some very candid quotes, some expletives flying from the coaches who are like, are you kidding me? October 31st, our guys haven't even been working out. How are we supposed to do that?
Just one thing on that. Some of these schools, their players were sent home, so they're not going to be coming back until Sunday. Then they have to quarantine for basically a week. So by the time they get out of quarantine, you're already talking about being into almost, it's late September. That's a different run-up. And so one of those quotes you mentioned, I'm not going to include the expletive parts that are, people can read that, but here's where it goes. I don't think people know that when the seasons were postponed, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 took completely different paths. They kept going like it was still training camp. They kept the same schedule like they were going to play. We didn't. Half our schools couldn't. And then it's our nose is so bleeping far up the Big Ten's backside. Let's just do what's best for the Pac-12. Why do we work out in the summer if we only need a few weeks to play? So it's like very different between, it's one thing to be in cardio shape and it's another thing to be in football shape. And again, just from seeing some of the comments from some, it's all anonymous as well. It's not like the Pac-12 ADs are going on record with this either. But what you've heard is like, they think it's just the California schools. And I can say The Athletic talked to a lot of coaches from around the league that's more than that. So,
okay, so your story represents the voice of the coaches. John Wilner, who is the Pac-12 reporter and has been all over this stuff, he's probably talking to his sort. I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong here. You guys are probably talking to different people, and he's writing that there's huge frustration. Frustration engulfed the Pac-12 on Friday in the aftermath of the president's delaying their vote on return to play schedule. The conference is churning forward with a plan, and it includes options for games on October 31st, according to a source. So his sources are telling him that there's at least some of the conference that's ticked off that they punted it to Thursday and that it probably won't be able to start until November 7th. They're ready to go. They want to play October 31st. And if they, instead of, making everybody wait a week, why don't you let us play earlier if we're ready?
Yeah, look, maybe Colorado and Utah, they square off on the 24th, or they square off on the 31st, and maybe I don't know if that solves, you know, all the issues or all the frustration here. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if and when the Pac-12 decided to come back, that they, if they did it on the 31st or they did it on the 7th, they would start out with the four California schools playing each other. UCLA would play Cal, and Stanford maybe would play USC. One thing I will say from our reporting, though, on Friday, when the coaches were to meet with Larry Scott, as well as Merton Hanks, who helps run the football division of the Pac-12, the bulk of their talk was really all framed around a November 7th start date. And if you look at when they're going to make their announcement on Thursday, that syncs up with the time clock of they can't start their 20-hour period to begin to get ready for games really until what would be that Friday. So if you count back, it syncs up with the November 7th date. And I think at that point, when some of these ADs at probably a few of these programs that have maybe didn't have as many restrictions on it locally, I think that's when they said, oh my God, we're going to get pushed back into early November. Now, you'll hear people talk about, we can't be in the CFP. I'm curious as to, realistically, how many of these schools do you think, Stu, would actually even, when you hear, okay, these Pac-12 schools are outraged that we're not going to get consideration for the CFP, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't know that that's a driving factor. I feel like they've kind of conceded that, because
I don't think they have, Stu. Okay,
but even if you can start on the 31st, that means you're playing at most 8 games. The Big Ten's going to be able to get to 9, and that's still, you know, you're still at a disadvantage there. They think maybe they can still get consideration, though. You're playing 8 maximum, and you're going to be compared against teams that might play 10 or 11. I just think that there's no equivalent in the Pac-12 to Ohio State, who's like, we've got a national championship caliber team. We need to get playing as soon as possible. This would be, wasting a golden opportunity. I mean, I think if anybody would want it, would be in that position, it would be Oregon. And I haven't heard Mario Cristobal go to the mat. Oregon's been dealing with these terrible, terrible wildfires. Nobody has been able to go outside and practice football anytime recently. So it seems to me that you just mentioned Colorado and Utah. I don't think either of those teams thinks they're going to be winning a national championship this year. So that doesn't seem to me to be. I think that, you know, the conference wants to sync up. The conference. Let's go back a second. The conference, when Larry Scott made that announcement of the deal with Quidel, that was September 3rd. He said, at that point, you know, the Big Ten wasn't talking about starting in October. They were talking about starting in Thanksgiving. And so was the Pac-12. In fact, even then, it was maybe, possibly, we'll be able to start earlier than January 1st now. He said he was hoping they could sync up with the Big Ten so that they, if they both were starting too late to be done by December 19th, that at least they could play each other in what would be the equivalent of a Rose Bowl. Once the Big Ten moved up its timetable, I think that the Pac-12 was like, shoot, we can't be left behind. We can't. Who are we going to play? You know, we'll have no postseason. So I do think there's an urgency to get going so that they can get their New Year's Six spot, which, by the way, there's nobody thought to put in the contract that you should play a minimum number of games. So however they determine their champion, that champion gets to go to a New Year's Six Bowl. And then you can have your Holiday Bowl and your Alamo Bowl and whatnot. That seems to be their priority. They want to get their New Year's Six money and their New Year's Six bid. It doesn't seem like there's a overriding rush to get going so 7-0 Oregon, or I get maybe 8-0 Oregon, can try to get picked over 10-2 LSU.
I am just telling you, from some of the conversations I've had with some folks in the league, they do talk about CFP consideration. That came up this week.
Well, I admire their optimism.
Yeah. Yeah.
They couldn't make it in when they were playing 12 or 13 games, much less 7 or 8.
Right.
Well, I do think that there's a question to be asked, which is, what the heck was Larry Scott doing all this time? They got that deal done on September 3rd for the testing. The testing wasn't going to arrive until the end of the month. But in the meantime, he just kept saying, oh, our hands are tied. You know, the local health officials aren't letting the California schools and the Oregon schools practice. So we've just got to sit around and wait. And then as soon as the Big Ten announced they were playing, suddenly most of, you know, Gavin Newsom, within 24 hours, Gavin Newsom had relented, and the Oregon's governor had relented, and the LA County officials had relented. And it's like, why didn't you have those conversations 3 weeks ago, in which case you could be up and running already and definitely play enough games to get playoff consideration?
Yeah, I just don't think that they're some of them are not listening, and I'm not sure how much some of them, and I'm talking about the ADs, have really, maybe I think they're so focused on what's in their own backyard that I think that's probably where some of this disconnect has been, and why you had frustration on both sides of this. And I don't think it's like a, you know, I don't think it's like all of a sudden the people who are looking at it going, you know, like you said, I think myself and John Wilner, I'm sure we're talking, there may be a little bit of overlap of maybe one or two people, but I'm not sure. Like, I mean, I don't doubt that the AD's frustration of some of the ADs he's talked to is, no, I think that's real. Just like I think he knows that some of the coaches out there that he probably hasn't talked to, like there's, you know, there's also, that's where some of the blowback is coming from. And, you know, and a little of this has to do with, look, the footprint of the Pac-12 is a big one in terms of running from Arizona through the mountain region to Washington State. I mean, that's sizable. And I think you've had a lot of issues in a pandemic that have come up.
The Pac-12 is now, I mean, at one point it just seemed like they had their stuff together much more than the Big Ten, and now they're having their own chaotic moment. Should we tackle some mailbag questions? As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Try to get them in by Sunday morning if you think about it, if you think of it, if you remember it, after the game Saturday night. John Roberts from North Carolina. Hey, guys. I've been thinking about this. Why can we not just push back the final playoff announcement to January 2nd? They say that college football needs to own New Year's Day. You know how college football can own New Year's Day this year? Conference Championship Day. All conferences play their conference titles that day. Then the playoffs happen around January 16th. That gives every conference two more weeks to make up games if necessary. Why is this not happening? Bruce, I proposed this exact idea when the Big Ten first started getting serious about playing, coming back sooner than Thanksgiving, with the thought that this would give them a chance to actually play a full schedule.
I like this idea. It makes a lot of sense. I'm sure somebody can poke a couple holes through it. But one thing I heard a lot in the last, not one thing, but one of the things I've heard a lot in the last couple of weeks is, how come they don't just bump back the CFP a little later in the calendar? And one of the things somebody else said, well, you know, then all of a sudden you're kind of running the risk of running into the NFL draft run up. I don't know. I think it's a unique year. I think because, as John said, it would give you a little more schedule flexibility. I mean, who knows what the virus situation is going to be like in January, but I don't know. I think that idea makes some sense.
I think they could, you know, everybody is always resistant to change and, oh, we always play the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day and whatnot. But as we've seen this season with some of these quick turnaround scheduling of games, if you want it to happen, you can make it happen, especially if we're assuming that, you know, as of this moment, I would not expect there to be fans at the Rose Bowl. So that makes it a little easier to move around. Now, I think that the counter to this would be, why should the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 wait around on the Big 10 and Pac-12? You know, they chose to shut it down when they did, and the others went ahead, and why should they delay their season a couple weeks and risk, like you said, I mean, Trevor Lawrence has not opted out, but would he be okay, you know, waiting till January 16th instead of, waiting till, I guess you wouldn't, in this scenario, you wouldn't be able to play the championship till like January 23rd. Right now it's January 11th. You know, would he be willing to wait two more weeks to begin his preparations for the draft and all the other guys who are going to be on those playoff teams? I don't know. But if you wanted to make it work, you could make it work. And hey, maybe if the SEC gets into this and is just facing constant cancellations. I mean, you saw this past week, I believe we had five games get canceled. Some of them at the very last minute on Friday. Then maybe they would say, hey, we could use an extra couple weeks. But as of now, I would plan on it being played as scheduled.
All right, Stu, let's close the mailbag on this from Rob in Atlanta. Given the different number of games, start dates, and canceled games, this might be the first year that I am interested in watching the playoff committee rankings weekly TV show. Am I getting my hopes up too much? Will they somehow still find a way to make it boring TV, or will it be the most college football thing ever?
I mean, how could you not want to watch those first couple when they're trying to compare? And I don't know, maybe they will end up pushing their rankings a little bit later. I don't know. But when they put out a rankings that involves teams, some teams have played seven games and some teams have played two. Now maybe they'll say we're not going to include those teams yet. I don't know. I mean, the AP is trying to figure out how to do that right now, and it's all over. They said basically they can't. They told the voters late last week that once the Big Ten actually has a schedule, then you can start ranking their teams. And then I think they caught them up. Big Ten kind of caught them off guard that when they did release the schedule, so they're still not in it this week, in this most recent one on Sunday, but they will be next week. And I'm just like, how are you going to – you're really going to put 0-0 Ohio State ahead of 2-0 Clemson or you know whatever that may be? I think at some point you just got to rank the teams that have actually played.
With all due respect, Stu, to our friend Ralph Russo, who runs the AP poll, does that really matter at this point at all?
The AP poll?
Not does it have any validity. I'm just saying in terms of the issue you're bringing up, whether they're on there or not, like it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. I mean, well, it only matters in terms of what's the main way the AP poll is used early in the season is basically as marketing, right, for the games. For ESPN or Fox, you'll be able to say we've got number 7 against number 12. So,
right, but when those teams aren't actually playing, in the case of the Big Ten, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter like of great importance. I'm just saying it. If you suddenly bring those teams back into the mix next week just because you think Ohio State or Penn State's going to be the whatever best team in the country, it's going to then cause these teams that have actually played in one game's rankings to move down. It's going to kind of suppress the ability to market. Right.
Louisville-Miami is an 18 versus 16. Or
right, exactly.
It might be 21 versus 24.
Louisiana Lafayette might not have been ranked yet. So that all that, but to his point about the committee shows, I always watch them. Obviously, I think that they're a little bit drawn out. But at the end of the day, you know, this year it's going to be this is going to be the craziest playoff race there's ever been. I mean, teams. Who knows what it'll look like by the time they start doing those in terms of how many games. Even the teams that started when they were scheduled to start, you know, how many games will they have actually played by then? I thought of a kind of a nightmare playoff scenario as I was watching UCF yesterday. You know, we talked a lot about, I think in last week's episode, about, so now the Big Ten's going to play 9 games and what happens when it's 8-1 Ohio State against 10-2 or 9-2 SEC team? Okay, what if it's if UCF is undefeated and they played a full 11 or 12 game schedule, and then Ohio State at 8-1 gets in over them? If I'm UCF, I mean, that's it. Like, you think Danny White was ticked before? Good Lord, if that happens.
All right, and on that note, let's get back to the podcast later this week. I think we'll have a special guest.
Yes, we will.
As always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you in a few days.
How did we get away with the things we used to do? Jumping off bridges, spinning down hills, and catching air. The
Thank you.